League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there. League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Hello, I'm Andrew Jupin.
Steven Sadak.
Chris Gavin.
And we hate movies. Everyone, welcome to the final episode of We Hate Movies. Of 2013. Sorry about that. Got a little beer caught in my throat there.
I was packing my bags.
Get out of here, Sadak. The bus is leaving.
Let's not even talk about it.
No. Just the final episode for the year 2013. We will, of course, be back in 2014. But in the meantime, we're here to talk about 2003's The Core. Who directed this? John Emile. Who we just were chatting about with Copycat a couple weeks ago.
It's one of his. And he's a slow master, isn't he?
Well, because he also did Entrapment.
Yeah, I have a feeling John Emile, this isn't going to be his final appearance on the show.
No.
Entrapment, also known as Catherine Zeta-Jones' ass.
Oh, absolutely. That's all that movie is. That was the trailer.
Boy, she does a lot of squat thrusts, huh?
Yep.
Probably.
She's just dodging all those lasers.
Hey, you want to spend $10 to see that? No? Why not?
Because I'll spend $3.95 to rent it at Blockbuster when it comes on video.
The Core, or as I like to call it, the largest collection of the least bankable stars in history. Just all end to end, right?
It was a thing where I think they were like, listen, if we get a bunch of these like mid to low level people and get enough of them in one movie, it'll kind of add up to one bankable star.
Yeah,
like we get all these dudes in a room and it adds up to like a late 90s Harrison Ford. That's what you're going for.
Look, you can either get the Criterion Blu-ray or you can get a bunch of used Blu-rays from your Blockbuster during the going out of business sale.
Exactly. And you got a big collection. It looks great. Everyone assumes you're a big movie buff.
They're not looking at the titles anyway.
Man, that's a thing I hate, by the way. Oh, he's a movie buff. Oh, that guy? That's Steve Sadak? He's a movie buff.
He's a real movie buff.
That Chris Cavan, he's a movie buff.
You know what? I don't want to be called an enthusiast.
Yeah. Well,
I don't. That's the one I do. I'm fine with film buff as long as you don't get like, oh, he's a film enthusiast.
Well, an enthusiast is like a nice way of saying weekend warrior. Like, to me, enthusiast sounds like you're kind of into something.
Well, it means you're on the brink when I hear it.
The brink of what?
Madness.
Oh.
I appreciate anyone that's not calling me a fucking loser, so I'll take film buff. Oh, that guy's a fucking loser.
Oh, that's Steve Sadak? Yeah, I know. He's a fucking loser. So this movie's about the world dies. Now, here's the question I have for the audience, and I mean, you know, you guys in the room. Did anybody see this movie when it came out?
Absolutely not.
I did not know that this was 2003. I figured this had to be like a late 90s.
Yeah.
Set it and forget it.
This should have been like right after Twister. This should have, and I think that was the thing. I think it was one of those things where they had the script and it got held up for forever.
Yeah.
Yep. And then nobody wanted to do it because, I mean, they read it. And, you know, but a bunch of people did. Hilary Swank wanted like a big Hollywood blockbuster, I guess.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this. It's 2003. How do you not have Robert De Niro in this movie? He's someone who doesn't give a fuck about anything by 2003. Showtime was 2002.
He'd have to do a whole lot of running.
You're telling me he did a whole lot of running for this fucking Sylvester Stallone boxing movie that's coming out?
He looks like shit in that movie.
They both do. Yeah. They both look like dog shit. And that poster, you seen those billboards around the city?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's the worst photoshopping ever. That person who made that poster
should
be fired.
It's not a cartoon?
Fired.
No. It looks like an anime, like they like animated their faces.
You know what it looks like? Speaking of cartoons, it looks like a Jib Jab email video.
I think in the future, all movies are going to be Jib Jab. You know, like, you got it. That's what this movie is anyway. It's like a disaster movie Jib Jab. You know, you just get, you punch in the elements and then they go, bah, 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 they dance around. The fucking thing takes 2 hours and 15 minutes.
2 hours. Unbelievable. 15 minutes. I watched it today. And I was like, that can't be right, Netflix. I almost wrote Netflix. I was like, error on your runtime for the core.
I was an asshole because I was like, I had Christmas shopping to do last night. So I was like, I'll do the shopping. That course can't be more than 95 minutes. And I'm just fucking wilding away at the Bath and Body Works, grabbing all sorts of shit. And it's just fucking the time of my night is adding up. And then all of a sudden I get home and it's 2 hours and 15
minutes. A lot of rose scented things.
Yes.
Dude, I love Bath and Body Works. I'll tell you why. Two reasons. Amazing candles and amazing foam soap. It's out of this world. And you go on Retail Me Not, get that app. There's always a deal. You get like two big fucking candles for $20.
Yeah. Bath and Body Works. This week's sponsor on We Hate Movies.
So the planet is dying in this movie. The core has stopped spinning.
Or it's like not spinning the right way.
No, it stopped spinning. As Aaron Eckhart effectively explains, is it's like there's a wrench inside it. The core, Chris, in case you're wondering, is like a big engine. And we're going to say this a bunch of times for 2 hours and 15 minutes. The core is like a big engine, and the engine stopped for some reason. So let's get down there and fix it. Just go down there and fix that fucking, that molten sun that's in the middle of the goddamn earth.
I read an interesting thing, and this is kind of a good place to start with this movie. In Canada, okay, now let me find it. I want to get the school's credit right here. All right. University of British Columbia.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, there is like some sort of environmental science and ocean science class you can take.
Sure.
They watch this movie to teach examples of bad science in movies. They sit there, they watch this movie, and then the teacher presumably is like, nope, 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 yep, oh, nope, nope.
Well, I mean, you spend every 5 minutes to say, well, that can't be right.
Like, yeah, I know almost nothing about this, you know, science. I mean, science of any kind. I sit here doing a fucking comedy podcast every week. I know pretty much nothing about science. But even I, as someone who knows pretty much nothing about science, is going, nope.
I wrote this note that says, my ass movie. And I don't know what it's in reference to because it literally could be 10 to 12 different things.
It could be anything from the science involved straight down to Stanley Tucci's wig. I mean, anywhere in between. DJ Qualls as a hacker who uses the line of dialogue, you want me to hack the world, which is a joke that we made in the Hackers episode that turned out to be a real thing in a movie none of us had seen yet.
So you can get free international calls with a gum wrapper.
Whatever.
My ass movie.
Oh, absolutely.
You know what I think movie? It was before that one.
Steve's ass movie.
It's the one you don't want. So, yeah, the engine is dying, and we have to Armageddon. We have to go into the center of the Earth. We'll get there. How does that make sense? And shoot off a bunch of nukes and restart the engine, because nukes literally can do anything.
Like, and this is, it's weird. It's very pro-nuclear power. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, we need these weapons. What happens if the Earth dies? We got to do something to jumpstart it.
This is how we're going to keep on going.
Steve made that Nelson Muntz joke before he started. Got to nuke something.
Yeah, you do got to nuke something.
Man, that nuke the whales poster, that's just wrong-headed and hilarious.
Mean, they do have whales in this movie, and they probably are going to get some nuclear poisoning.
Oh, yeah.
If that hole is right there.
There's going to be a leak of some kind.
I don't know.
I mean, the hypothetical science that has to go into... Like, let's just pretend you can get to the center of the Earth and you're in a spaceship made out of magic.
I'm with you.
Which they're in.
They take the magic school bus, that redheaded teacher, and that fucking school bus that may or may not have talked. I don't remember. Like, that's how they... Did they actually go to the center of the Earth on that program? They were going all sorts of places.
They were going all sorts of places.
They went to space a lot. I think it was a lot of leaving the planet on that show.
I was, you know what? I was always a Wayside Stories from Wayside School kind of guy.
What?
I don't know what those things.
What is that?
Oh, really? It's like a weird school where like each chapter or maybe even each book is about like a different student.
Like Rick Moranis in Gravedale High?
Something like that.
That was that show where Rick Moranis was a teacher at a high school full of monsters. Coming soon to Animation Damnation, probably.
If you can find it.
Oh, I'm sure it's out there.
So
anyway,
when you're the idea of like, all right, we actually can get there somehow to the hottest place next to the sun, right, and we could fire. We're gonna fire nuclear weapons, and just it should work. I mean, I don't know. Earth is dead anyway. Well, let's just see what happens.
I mean, I think it's a thing where they're just like, it's a real like, well, why not? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
We're dead in what they say in 30 days. The planet's gonna be turned back to the Stone Age. And in 3 years, the Earth is going to be completely scorched.
But, okay. What? I can only imagine the pitch meeting of this when that thing... Look, the whole premise is that the core of the Earth stops spinning.
Yep.
Well, how would you ever begin to think of restarting something like that? I don't know, you push it.
You get up and push.
I think it starts like that, and it just snowballed into, yeah, let's just nuke it.
Yeah, it's like Fonzie hitting the jukebox, I guess, is the idea, right?
Well, I mean, there's a weird... I'm just picturing Henry Winkler has to go on this mission.
Only one person could do it.
They're like, all right, Henry, you got to be in character as the Fonz as we're drilling down there. He's like, what, the entire time? Yeah, dude, if the core hears you talking like Henry, they might not buy it.
I mean, it's the core. It might as well be the fucking fifth element for all I know. It's just one of those things that, like, the very idea is so off the map that you, well, whatever happens, you're just like, whatever.
Now, listen, here is a tried and true way to determine if your science fiction movie is full of bunk or not. Okay? If you present a screenplay in where the science that you put out makes Star Wars look like Carl Sagan's Cosmos miniseries, it's probably full of shit.
It absolutely is. I mean, the same thing with Star Trek as well. Like, all the bullshit computer magic that happens on that show, I buy at least because it's set in either a galaxy far, far away or in the fucking 29th century. Like,
because
why
Patrick Stewart's got a fucking spiky-headed guy talking to him.
It's style. It's like they get the fantastical elements in everything. But this, it's like all super reality, and like death is super real in this. We'll get to it.
This movie loves killing.
Suffering is such a crucial element to this movie, and it's a disaster movie.
Suffering's also a crucial element of watching this movie, by the way.
But yeah, it's one of those things where you just like just fucking know how goofy this is. Just come to terms with how goofy this is so we can get going here.
Yeah, I mean, I think Stanley Tucci might be the only one that gets it.
Yeah.
As per usual.
Yes, exactly right. Stanley Tucci, like almost always, gets it.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Same with the Hunger Games movie. He gets it exactly right.
He's fantastic. I mean, I like those movies.
Yeah.
He's the best part about those movies.
Yeah. He's the only one that gets... I
feel like Sutherland gets
Sutherland
it.
Gets a paycheck is what he gets.
I'll disagree with you on that. Right. I feel like Sutherland sees what those movies are
for. I don't know if he's just sadistic enough. Like, he's not... I would want him to be a little bit more over-the-top sadistic rather than just, like, grim and, you know, stiff.
Yeah, but if he's too sadistic, then the president becomes a cartoon villain. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they try.
Well, I mean, it's the movie's kind of cartoonish, isn't it? I mean...
What, The Hunger Games is cartoonish?
I think it's a bit cartoonish. It's fun.
I have fun with it, but it's cartoonish.
I don't know if cartoonish is the word.
It's just all that matte. It's all the glitz and the glamour and the thing.
Well,
and
that stuff.
It's a bit, you know.
That stuff's playing for laughs.
Yeah, and then you got the world engineer that Philip Seymour Hoffman is.
He's the game maker?
Yeah, a game. There's a job, game maker.
I wish I had the highest.
You are paying roles, I think, in the government.
I'm in the Hunger Games. These are, yeah. I think it's a book series.
This is him talking to his daughter.
I don't know. My niece watches them, I guess. I don't. I got a movie to make.
God, I'm so fucking horny.
anyone got a number on that prostitute? Yeah.
So you're saying you didn't think he was really trying?
No,
movie.
I think he might have been a little checked out in that performance.
Well, we'll see what he does in these next two movies because his character is a gigantic part of them. So
speaking of gigantic things,
this problem that the Earth has in this movie,
and Aaron Eckhart. I mean, was an editorial intern at a major publishing company, and I read an unsolicited manuscript that reminded me so much of this, where it's like...
Oh, I thought you were going to say you read an unsolicited manuscript from Aaron Eckhart.
It's fan fiction. Kirk and Spock fucking each other for 200 pages.
Dear We Hate Movies, in the episode of The Core, when Steve said fan fiction and then referred to Kirk and Spock fucking, he was actually referring to a subgenre called slash fiction. Great show!
gotta get off that computer. I got a couple emails to send.
Then Sutherland walks in.
Would anybody like to smoke some pot?
Oh, he's naked again.
No.
Pot?
The manuscript in question was this thing called Anomaly, and it's actually published now. It's absolutely terrible.
Was it published under Anomaly?
Yes, it's self-published. I'm just talking shit about this guy's book now.
That's fine.
Bah. And he...
For the record, I was the one that solicited that book.
But it's about this guy who is this square-jawed, awesome, good-looking scientist. He's like an FBI profiler. Like, he's a genius. He always knows what to do in every situation.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And it's incredibly boring. And that's Aaron Eckhart in this movie. He's... a genius with no bounds whatsoever. He's the only person to figure out that the core is broken. And you would think he's just kind of the Elijah Wood of this movie that sees like the fucking thing and he kind of comes along for the ride. No, he solves every single problem
in
this movie.
He's the main character. Yeah. And you're right. He should take a backseat to Delroy Lindo, by the way.
Goddamn right.
Who's an amazing actor.
But can we talk about the hair? He looks like his aunt mussed his hair before every scene.
See, because that's the thing that this movie does, right? Like, he's a scientist and he's a college professor.
Yeah.
So he does not have time to put himself together. He's too concerned. He's always thinking about science. He's thinking about his lecture that morning where he's going to play the trumpet in front of a piece of limestone for some reason.
He's just got the same outfit for every day.
Yeah.
He really took Albert Einstein's thing to heart.
Yeah, I mean, and 3 hours at the gym, but sure. I mean, everything else is just...
Yeah, exactly. He's, like, definitely the most fuckable dude in this cast.
Absolutely.
Hands down. Sorry, Stanley Tucci. So he's a scientist.
BT Dubs, nice little cameo here from Rekha Sharma from Battlestar Galactica. She's the his Indian American assistant there.
Oh, the two assistants.
Yes.
When he's playing the trumpet to the rock.
Oh, the TA.
Yeah, she's the TA.
She's on Battlestar.
Yeah, she's a pretty big role there.
Again, I watched three episodes.
You'll never see her again. Yeah, and he figures it out. I guess because what happens is this movie opens and everyone has a pacemaker attack in some major city. I forget where
it's
it is.
Boston.
So there's the whole thing is like the electromagnetic field that's around the planet, which is caused by like the core, which is made up of liquid metal that's spinning around really fast. And when metal goes around that fast, it creates the electromagnetic current. This is what I was understanding from this movie. So there was a fluctuation in that, and everyone who had a pacemaker in this one area of Boston dropped dead.
Which yeah. must have been dozens, because it's mass chaos. Well,
did you see that warehouse that they go to? It's an airplane hangar filled with fucking corpses.
Yeah, Richard Jenkins, Crooked General, brings...
you know he's crooked, by the way, because he's got a mustache.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's the crookedest mustache I've seen in a while.
And he brings Checky Cario from Addicted to Love, our favorite movie, and Aaron Eckhart to this warehouse full of dead people, like fucking top to bottom.
What's amazing is they walk in, and they're kind of like scientist best buds.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, they've probably had some adventures in Nicaragua or like whatever, you know. And they walk in, they're palling around, and they walk into this airplane hangar filled with bodies. It's a bunch of tables and there's bodies with sheets over them. It's clearly a, you know, mass grave.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they walk in and they don't get it.
It's a gag. It's a full gag.
They don't get it instantly. Like, I walk into that room, I'm like, holy shit, here's 60 dead bodies.
I'm not walking into the room. They open the door. I see all the bodies. I walk backwards.
Like, Aaron Eckhart, like, bumps into a table or something, and he's, bah!
Yeah, he should do a full-on homina, 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 homina.
Oh, if anyone was ready for a Jackie Gleason homina, it's him. Because he's spooked by this corpse.
The weird thing is, Richard Jenkins practically abducts these dude. He has, like, you know, his black hats, bring them there, and he's like, all right, is this the work of terrorists? And Aaron Eckhart takes a thought, and he's a genius, and figures out immediately it's because of pacemakers. And he's like, no, it's not. He's like, okay, see you later.
That's all I wanted to know.
Thank you very much.
And yeah. Then Aaron Eckhart has a really obnoxious screenplay line where he goes, but wait a second, there's nothing on the other side of this equals sign. Shut up. Just shut up. That's what I actually realized about movies like this. They'd be much better if they didn't have punchy, like, 1990s screenplay dialogue.
Yep.
Yeah.
Just have a really straight-laced movie. Like, there's way too much joke cracking in this screenplay.
I mean, that's why Paul Greengrass makes great movies.
Yeah, I don't think Paul Greengrass has ever told a joke in his life. And he's one of the most amazing working filmmakers today.
Now I'm just imagining him in front of a brick wall. anyone keeping up with what's going on in Syria? Pretty harrowing, huh?
Actually,
it's not supposed to be funny.
Actually, I will say that I saw him do a Q&A at New York Film Festival, and he was a funny guy. He was cracking jokes with Tom Hanks after Captain Phillips.
He seems like a nice, like a good dry humor.
If there was
guy.
Ever a sold out audience that needed some levity after a screening.
But I think you're right. But because I think the problem is this movie is it's a B movie. It's a legitimate B movie.
Oh, yeah.
And it's in this style of Armageddon, which is snappy and a big Hollywood blockbuster. And absolutely not. It's
totally absent of that. Like, here's the thing. I don't like his movies, and his work has appeared on this show before, but Michael Bay knows how to make this kind of crap flashy and fun to look at. This is dull as dirt.
Fun. Capital F fun. It's the only thing Michael Bay's good at.
Yeah.
Is making something fun.
Like, those movies are bad, but for the most part, you can find a solid, like, 50-minute block, all told, that's fun to watch.
And it's just all grim death in this movie. It's from the get-go, it's all just fucking, we're all gonna die. And then in the middle of it, like, you want to talk about the pacemaker thing. The other thing that makes them know that something wrong is going on is a bunch of birds. The birds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's like a Hitchcock reference.
Look at that.
And they just fall from the sky. It's the silliest looking thing in the world.
It's really terrible. And it happens in London, this event. And all these people are running around. It's just a bad scene, straight out of The Birds. Actually, you know what? The movie The Birds does a better job at a bird attack in the fucking night when that fuck came out, what, 63, I think.
Sounds right.
Like, in 1963, your bird effects
are
way better than in 2003, by the way. Come on.
It's really, and it's, we're on that checklist, right? It's like, what's happening in major cities? I don't care. Like, maybe let's see what's going on in, like, Northumberland. Maybe that's where the birds are. Like, why does it always have to be, like, literally every, there's three or four disaster scenes in this movie. Each one is at a major city, at a major, what do you call it, landmark.
Well, because we're borrowing from Michael Bay. Yeah. We're borrowing from
Independence Day.
Yeah. Limerick. Yeah, right? This idea of, like, we got to see, landmarks destroyed. The fucking Golden Gate Bridge goes in this movie. We'll get it. It's just so stupid. So Aaron Eckhart, Checky Cario, they are some scientists that we've met. And, you know, this is a movie that's made post-1995 that's talking about bringing about the end of the world, so we have to have astronauts of some kind, of some caliber. And enter the D-team, NASA's D-team, Hillary Swank and Bruce Greenwood.
That's where my ass came from. It's the seed. It's the my ass seed. It's because...
I'm glad I could jog your memory.
Because they're coming in for a landing, you know, where we just finished our little space jaunt. It's 2003. We don't think NASA's ever going to run out of money. So we're just coming on in for a landing. And
government furloughs? That's ridiculous.
And they're, because, again, of the core, their radar is off or whatever. I'm sure it's much more technical on a spaceship. It's not just called radar, but their radar is off. And
they're instruments. They're navigation instruments.
They're flying head on into Los Angeles, right? And it's like, oh, fuck, we're going the wrong way.
You know what? The dying core of the Earth does the same thing that the terrorists in Die Hard 2 do. Remember in Die Hard 2 when they adjust the shit, that plane crashes? It's the same thing. Like, they're way off course. They have no idea what their altitude is. And yeah, downtown Los Angeles.
You think William Sadler's doing naked yoga while he's watching this? Like, excellent.
Oh, yeah. Here's a question I've always had about that scene, right? That scene cuts after a couple of, like, butt-cheek-wiggling kicks. Is he jerking off at the end of that?
In the movie or, like...
Not William Sadler, the actor. The guy is the guy character? Jerking off.
I assume he's jerking it 24/7.
Right? Like, yeah. he's been jerking off. Maybe he jerked off beforehand.
He only trusts his hands.
But he feels great. Like, yeah. Good one. Yeah.
I was wondering that about William Sadler's character in Die Harder. Yeah, anyway.
Absolutely. So it's like, oh, fuck, we're going the wrong way. You know, Houston's totally useless. Alfre Woodard is the Ed Harris role in Houston, doing a whole lot of nothing. She goes throughout this entire movie doing absolutely nothing.
She's got nothing
to say to nobody. And, you know, she's just like, well, I don't know what to do. And Hillary Swank's eyeballing it from a falling spaceship. She's like, I got an idea. Let's go to this heading, and that heading. And Bruce Greenwood's like, yeah, all right, let's go there. And they go, they take a right, and they go to the Los Angeles River, and it's a spaceship like my ass. It's threading a needle.
You want to know how fake this was for me? I was certain it was going to be a test thing and she was going to walk out of a machine.
Yeah.
I was certain of it. The first time I watched it, I was like, well, this is just a test.
Like,
it crashes,
and you're like, holy shit. And then it's like, and then the door opens, and she's just been taking the Kobayashi Maru.
Kobayashi Maru went in my head when I thought it.
Kirstie Alley's like, oh, I lost again.
And it's got that crappy Michael Bay thing where it's like the space shuttle lands perfectly, but it's like kind of they're having trouble with the brakes and they're getting closer and closer to some scaffolding and all these construction workers are running
who's scrubbing graffiti off of this bridge. It's just like the nose of it is right up his asshole.
His headphones are on, so he can't.
I hate the headphones. I've got headphones on jokes because, listen, I have, you know, hearing loss these days from the loudness I keep headphones on. You know, it's just
the price I gotta pay.
But living in New York City, being on the train and whatnot, you can crank that shit as high as you want. Noise is still getting through. And this motherfucker's got these, like, chintzy-ass nothing headphones on, just bopping along, painting over this graffiti. There is a space shuttle behind you.
More than that, it crashed into the ground. It's fucking reverberating.
You felt it. Yeah, you have to feel it, Chris. Thank you.
Yeah, it touches down, and it's a big, what the fuck was that? And it does it twice. It touches down, and then for some reason, they put the landing gear. This is ridiculous. They're like, all right, the brakes are out. We have to use something else to help us to stop. We'll take the landing gear in, so we'll just touch on the ground and, you know, hopefully scrape enough that we stop. But now, I don't know. Again, I'm not a science guy doing a comedy podcast.
Well.
But what they do is they say, take in the landing gear. And what happens in the movie is the landing gear goes up so fast, the tires go up, and the shuttle crashes down. If you're doing that, wouldn't the shuttle go down to the ground?
It would break into the, yeah.
Because gravity, you know, the tires are on the ground.
It's not a pool table. You know what I mean? Like, it's just tons and tons and tons.
Just part of the jambalaya of bullshit that this thing is serving you.
Emeril Lagasse's super spicy bullshit jambalaya.
Oh, we're going to get some bams in a minute. The one thing I want to point out, it's an analogy I want to test out with you guys. Because Bruce Greenwood, very early on, is dead meat. You know for a fact. Oh, yeah. Because his whole thing is, and you can just tell because you've seen a movie before. He's like, he's like Hilary Swank's mentor, and he's like, well, you know, yeah. One day you're gonna have to make the hard decision, and I'm not gonna be there for you. It's like
it's kind of just his Star Trek speech.
Yeah, exactly. Here's my question: is Bruce Greenwood America's Sean Bean?
He makes it. Kind of through the first Star Trek movie, even though he's like tortured and whatever.
Yeah, he does die in that second one. Spoiler alert.
He might be.
He's gruff, you know.
I mean, like, here's the thing: Sean Bean's in like most movies. Bruce Greenwood's in. Bruce Greenwood's in all the movies. He's in every. Like, it's a point of saturation. I just don't notice him anymore.
But I'll tell you, some credit to Bruce Greenwood as far as what he's doing in this movie. I was like, I would buy him as an actual astronaut.
Yeah,
like, to give you like a contrast in Gravity, which I loved, great movie. George Clooney's not a believable astronaut.
Nope, not at all.
He's not a believable veteran astronaut.
To be fair, George Clooney's not a believable anything other than George Clooney.
Yeah, that's true.
Other than he's just Danny Ocean. In every movie, he's playing Danny Ocean.
Very true.
And I think he's a great actor, and I love watching his movies, but I'm always like, yeah, but you're still kind of George Clooney.
He's an actor. Like, you're watching him because he's him. Like, that's
Cary Grant was always Cary Grant. Yeah, that's true. But I believed Bruce Greenwood. I was like, I would let Bruce Greenwood pilot me into space. I would believe if Bruce Greenwood walked through that door and was like, "Hey fellas, I got a spaceship outside. You want to go for a ride?" I would be like, "I believe that you know how to do this,
you know,
Bruce
what?
Greenwood."
I would, but then he might take that spaceship to Meek's Cutoff, and then we're in real trouble.
I was gonna say almost. Whenever you need a handsome mid-50s man, you go to Bruce Greenwood. I feel.
Yeah. I mean, we're kind of making fun of him here, but he's a great actor.
Really, he's really good.
I will say that Sean Bean edges him out in one important area: HBO television shows. Sean Bean, Game of Thrones. Bruce Greenwood, John from Cincinnati.
Yeah.
That one hurts.
The loss. It's one in the loss column. Speaking of actors that got edged out by somebody, did Samuel L. Jackson in like 2000 go into Hollywood's office and he's like, no. I know that I have like... just about half the older black men roles in Hollywood right now.
But I want them all.
Yes, exactly.
All the roles.
And Delroy Lindo's like, no, Sam, please don't. He's like, no, I want them all. And he ate all of the roles.
What's interesting about, I mean, yes, I believe that incident actually took place. But Delroy Lindo, and this might spark some controversy in the room, is the better actor.
Might well be.
I believe Delroy Lindo as a variety of characters. Like, for example, we were just talking about this. Like, in this movie, Delroy Lindo is like a weird kind of, you know, like hermit type scientist. Yeah. I buy him as that. I also buy him as a badass corrupt city controller in Chicago Code. Sam Jackson, much like George Clooney, is kind of just always Sam Jackson, minus things like Django Unchained, where he's like really going for it.
I just think it's a difference of acting style. Like, Samuel L. Jackson's a comedian. Like, first and foremost, he's a funny fucking guy. Delroy Lindo's not really a funny guy. He can deliver a funny line, but he's
he's scary. Like, if he wants to be
scary
dude.
Like, in Clockers, he's amazing.
That I think is his best movie, and it's fucking a terrifying performance.
And he's amazing in Get Shorty. He's really good and intimidating in that. But he's not a fun... Like, Sam... I mean... The performance Samuel L. Jackson gives in Jackie Brown is one of my favorite performances.
It's probably the best work he's
done. It's funny and it is intimidating too at the same time. So I give him a little bit of the edge because I'd never seen Delroy Lindo really go out of his comfort zone.
I guess it's just, you know, to, you know, latch back onto what Steve was saying, though. Delroy Lindo definitely, maybe, probably lost out on some work due to absolutely. Sam Jackson.
I mean, he's kind of unfortunately gone away. I don't
That's
see
why
him
I was so excited for that Chicago Code, because I was like, holy fuck, Delroy Lindo is like the villain, and then it got canceled, which is fine. It wasn't great, but, you know.
Was Ransom his last big movie?
No, Ransom was like 95.
No, that was like 98.
Still, I mean, still, that's a long
almost 20
time
years ago.
But I'm trying to, because that was after Clockers.
I think his last movie was that Insufferable Heist movie from David Mamet.
Oh, yeah.
You want to talk about talkie talk and talkie talk.
Well, you just qualified that with saying David Mamet in front of it. I kind of like that movie. I guess Delroy Lindo did a voice in Up.
Oh, that's fun.
That's a thing. The thing that happened.
He's one of the cops that tries to take him in.
Whatever, that movie can fucking suck it.
Anyway.
So back to the core.
Now we're all the way back to the core. Aaron Eckhart, you know, is gaining support. He bum rushes Stanley Tucci, who's like fucking eating curtain this whole movie, which I'm fine with it.
Yep.
Oh, it is. And this, you know, say we were talking about this with Stanley Tucci, man, like, you can't find a movie he's sleeping through.
No, yeah.
I think the last time he was mentioned on this program in any capacity was that terrible Undercover Blues motion picture.
Yeah, and he's just trying the fuck in that movie.
Oh, yeah. He's really just going for it.
So he gets him, who's kind of like a really like a pop scientist, I guess.
And he's a 2003 Neil deGrasse Tyson. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, he's found a way to become a rock star scientist.
Sure.
And he's just eating it up.
But he also looks like a Mystery Men villain.
Well, yeah, we do have to talk about this wig. This is a wig. I mean, like, Stanley Tucci's a bald gentleman. He's the first one to say it when he walks into. Hey, guys, I'm bald.
Yeah,
but
in the he's not bald in the movies.
No,
normally he's not bald in the movies.
No, not often.
You're totally right about a Mystery Men villain. If in this movie Dane Cook popped out of nowhere and hit him in the face with a waffle iron,
I mean, he could be.
I'd be like, yep, that fits.
He could be Jeffrey Rush's second hand. I could see that.
Man, yeah, he's just got fucking this. Sucks.
He's got this silvery coif going, and always wearing black mock turtlenecks.
It's honestly kind of a predecessor role to Caesar Flickman in The Hunger Games.
Yeah, it's really close.
He's got like a cape coat going on.
He looks. I called him Broella DeVille. Like, it's what he looks like. It's ridiculous.
So, you know, Eckhart and Tucci come up with this plan, like, if only, you know, Eckhart's like, fuck it, we're dying, and him and Chick Carrier are getting wasted. And Stanley Tucci, even though he's kind of the prick of the movie, is like, you know, we could save the earth, we just need to somehow get down to the core. And he's like, well, how do we do that, asshole? And he's like, I might know someone. And of course, enter Delroy Lindo as this kind of like excommunicated scientist who has come up with not one, but two of the most impossible, incredible inventions anyone's ever thought of.
That both of these inventions are his life's work, and both inventions are crucial to the plan of burrowing to the center of the earth. Yep. He's working on both of them.
And Tucci waited it out for a little bit before you did. The first thing out of your mouth should have been this.
Oh, I got a guy. Like, oh, you need to burrow to the center of the earth? Hey, man, I got a guy. That's exactly what Stanley Tucci needs to say. Apparently, there's also some business about him and the Tucci used to be like scientist partners, and Tucci fucked him out of, like, I guess he took credit for some development or some such.
They put the villain up to 11 with Tucci a little too much. Like, not only does he have this wig and this cape coat and like this, this just
cape coat
and this
it's
demeanor
just a coat that he hasn't put his arms
but
through,
he drapes it like a cape.
Cape coat, yes.
But he's also since it's fucking, it's, you know, actually this is a little dated. This actually happened a lot later than it should have, but he's smoking all the time.
Oh, he certainly is, man. He certainly is. And you know what? He's missing that black plastic cigarette.
Yeah, he really is.
I think he probably had that. And then John Emile was like, let's just have you hold it. That's a bit much.
I'm going to mail this joke to 30 seconds ago. Vampire Weekend's new single, Cape Coat.
Watch, it's gonna happen.
It's gonna. I'd love it.
That's a B-side. That's absolutely a B-side.
So some, you know, in the, you know, we're a couple screenwriters having eaten some pizza, you know, and just like
definitely eating some pizza while writing this movie.
Like, well, the two. What are the two? All right, look. I know that there's a million reasons we can't go burn the center of the earth. Let's boil down the two biggest ones and solve them somehow. All right. Well, one. How are you going to cut through all that shit? That's a real big one.
Yeah.
And two, well, I mean, there's literally no substance on the face of this Earth or any parallel Earth that would withstand going down there. But Del Rolando's been working on both of those things.
Yeah. And here is the thing with the science in this movie, right? This part of it. And I love this show, and I am a defender of this show every season of it. This part of this movie is an episode of Fringe. It's the redonkulous alternate universe science that show had, where it's just impossible. One of the things, all right, so solving problem A, how do we dig down there? Flashlight laser. All right, flashlight laser it is. And all right, what's the other thing? The heat problem? Oh, I'm just going to say a bunch of bullshit and then I froze it. And all of a sudden, it's this new metal compound that can withstand it all. That's all. Now let's get down to that fucking stuffed crust pizza.
I imagine this screenwriter meeting as it's like the big whiteboard, and it's like they're expected to get a lot of different ideas on there, but the first two were just good enough, and they're like, fuck it, we're done, man.
As long as we get in there, we don't have to really think. I mean, how would you actually restart the core of the Earth? Oh, fuck it, bomb it.
Nukes, maybe?
Fuck it, bomb it. Yeah, that sounds right. Yeah, bomb the thing. Yeah, let's do that.
So, Del Rolando's got both of them, and that's it. And then it's like, let's bring them back to Richard Jenkins. We've got our team now. And, I mean, this is literally 40 minutes in, because it takes so long to get to where we need to go.
The first two set pieces were each, like, at least 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And they're like, big.
And here's the thing with these, like with the Armageddons and the Deep Impacts and the whatnot, there's always the one inciting incident before we figure out what the problem is.
Yes.
This movie has three of them before we're doing any kind of problem solving.
Nope.
And we're meeting all the characters. I mean,
slowly. Like, we spent a lot of time with Aaron Eckhart where I'm like, isn't this an ensemble movie?
Yeah.
And I also had the weird, and it's just one of those things where you remember trailers wrong. I kind of remembered F. Murray Abraham being in this movie. So I was kind of always waiting for, and then F. Murray Abraham shows up.
I mean, between 1998 and 2004, I kind of thought about that about most movies. I was pretty sure. I mean, like, I didn't see the hurricane, but I was almost positive F. Murray Abraham was one of the lawyers that got him out.
It's entirely possible.
It's completely plausible.
There's, one little bit of nonsense before they meet Delroy Lynn. I just want to touch on it really quickly,
sure,
because it's totally useless. When Aaron Eckhart and the Tooch are explaining to the government, like, this is the situation, is what we're dealing with.
Yeah.
And he's like, he grabs a peach and then he's like, does anybody have any air freshener? And I'm like, what the fuck are you talking? And then he explains everything. And this guy, like this FBI agent, goes to like find the air freshener, and he's gone for 10 minutes, and he just continues talking, explains everything, and then the guy comes back like, here's your air freshener, Mr. Eckhart, and he's like, oh, perfect, hey, Tooch, hold this.
And Tucci like touches his nose, and he's got it, know what's going on, he's already got the lighter ready.
And they just do the old, you know, like spraying an aerosol can at a lighter, and he burns this peach, and he's like, well, there you go, and I'm like, they all get it. At this point,
they've already got it.
They
really
it
don't
out.
Just want to say the world ends.
Or maybe get some facts and figures out, possibly.
Yeah. No. Guys, I need the fruit burning demonstration.
Look,
they're a bunch of plebeian government, military guys.
Look, we're in a movie called The Core. I have to use something with a pit. It has to happen.
Here's a useless piece of trivia is that, they couldn't find a peach that worked well, so they cut an apple in half and then stuck a fake pit in it. Like, you're making the core. Come on. Just come on. Use whatever peach that was there. Because you know what? I guarantee you, of the 7 peaches you tested, all 7 were perfect for this terrible movie.
Well, that's the problem, is it's perfectionism, Andrew. That's what really bog this film down. So we know who our team is. Yep. You know, we've got, you know, Hilary Swank and Bruce Greenwood superfluously are going to pilot this thing. But Bruce Greenwood's going to make it through the whole movie. Don't worry, everybody.
Don't. You know what? It's fine. It's he's going to make it.
He sure is.
Yeah.
And, you know, you've got Aaron Eckhart also, by the way, creates this insane navigation system that is like infrared magic, where it's like it knows exactly what this laser can cut through, and anything this laser can't cut through, it'll just be black. It's like this weird like inverted light thing. It's like how is anyone coming up with this?
The graphics on this thing look like a fucking 1994 Doom CD-ROM.
Yeah. I mean, even in fucking Deep Impact, they have years to develop technology to prepare for the end of the
world.
Why
would you make this timetable so cutting it close?
3 months.
It's all, yeah, in 3 months, the whole world will black out. You know what I mean? It'll go back to the Stone Ages.
Yeah.
So we really only have 3 months to make a spaceship that's going to go to the core.
Sales quarter to do this in.
That's it. Because you know what? Once this federal auditor comes through, they're fucked.
It's over.
Oh my God, I forgot. We're forgetting the most important member of the team, which is DJ Qualls as Rat.
Right.
Because it's 2003 and, you know, we need a hacker. And it's a part of the... It's like you are foregoing so many logistical elements that would be really necessary to make this movie real. Why do you have to be like, but what happens if the information gets out? What? Well, we'll have the world's greatest computer hacker, who's just this guy.
But I mean, this is bullshit.
Yes.
He's a one-man NSA.
Yes. Yep. He is going to hack the world, and he's going to control the internet for a couple months.
Yeah, that's it. That's all it is. They don't want word getting out because they don't want mass hysteria about the world ending, which goes against every natural disaster thing like this ever. You know, everybody always knows the world's ending. Who cares?
Well, you know what he's doing? He's hacking the planet.
He is. He says, you want me to hack the planet.
And, you know, he's like, all right. And, he gives Richard Jenkins shit because he's a suit, but also likes Aaron Eckhart because he's, A, gorgeous, and B, you know, he's a cool dude.
He's the most fuckable dude in this cast. I keep saying it.
Oh, and he throws some sass to Tucci, like, he's like, hey, Tucci, how many languages do you speak? 5. And he's like, yeah, I only speak one. Zeros and ones.
He
like,
tells Stanley
Tucci.
Shut the
fuck up, screenplay.
This is what I'm talking about with these snappy screenplays. He tells Stanley Tucci that all he needs is binary code to find out Stanley Tucci's sex fetishes. Well, and what's amazing, though, is Tucci plays this totally right because the look on the character's face is, what skeletons are in this rock star scientist's closet?
My walk-in sexual fetish closet.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man, all those trips to Thailand.
I'm so fucked.
But, yeah, he's just like, and he's like a hacker dude, so he's like, all I need is a bunch of Hot Pockets, which I love.
God. Hot Pockets and a collection of Xena Warrior Princess VHS tapes. I'm like, what are you doing? Jerking off while you're doing this computer programming?
Nobody needs it. Nobody needs it.
Nope.
Also, it's the fucking government. Ask for whatever the fuck you want in Hot Pockets and Xena.
Because
you're not the Trix
rabbit.
That's
a joke. That's a joke. But that's the joke.
Yeah,
he doesn't care about money. All he needs is his little pewter box. Okay, and he needs Hot Pockets because he's a fucking 30-year-old baby. That's it.
So now we know who our team is, and now we're moving in fast motion to get to. It takes so long to get in the fucking ground.
There's literally a high frame rate getting things done building montage in this.
You need a couple of them. And my favorite shot of the movie is they're just walking in a field for no reason. And they look at the sky and Hilary Swank's like, team, we better check this out. And I'm like, hey, what the fuck are you talking about? You just have no time to do anything else. But this leads to the San Francisco montage, which is apparently, part of what the Corps does is, and prove me wrong, scientists, because I don't know shit about shit. I'm just learning from the Corps, actually, is
you know, which I've already stated is a movie taught in science classes to show what wrong science looks like.
It deflects radiation from the sun, and
right, you know, it keeps us safe from solar flares.
Yes, yeah. And a solar flare gets through and hits the fucking Golden Great Bridge because it's a fucking monument, and it's a total bullshit Michael Bay scene, which is we're following one guy's comedic sort of demise, and he's a guy you've seen in a billion commercials, but it's hilarious because, like, and this is going to happen later in this movie, is the solar flare is coming down and, like, everything around him is melting, and he's just like, it's getting hot in here. Like, no, you're melting too. You know what I mean? Like,
I was going through the roof in this scene because outside tires are popping and melting, the bridge is melting, and this dude's in his car like, oh, this AC can't go any lower. Huh?
Yeah, I know. I
bummer. Not a bead of sweat on this stand-up comedian's forehead.
Again, we're gonna get to it within 20 to 30 minutes of this movie, you're going to see nothing but grim death. Why all of a sudden am I in, like, this fucking, you know, this dude in the middle?
This dude's getting hit with, like, a direct ray of sunlight. He needs to melt like a Nazi opening up a box.
That happens
every time a Nazi opens a box.
Oh, my shoes in here?
No, Heinrich, no! Oh, no. Heinrich, open the box.
By the way, this is one of those deaths where you don't even know it happened.
Yeah.
Like, all of a sudden, like, a solar flare hits you, you're just dead. You've just disintegrated.
Yeah, it's not like he looks up like, oh, no, a solar flare.
He takes off his hat, waves it at himself. No.
It's just instant death.
And one of the dumbest mistakes this movie gets wrong is, there, you know, this happens, and all of San Francisco is fucking destroyed because, thank God, a lot of people are dying. And they're watching from the command center. Hey, Richard Jenkins is like, oh no, the whole West Coast is without power. And you know what they're doing? They're watching news footage from San Francisco of people being loaded into stretchers. How are you getting cameras if the West Coast is without power? Fucking movie, man.
So terrible.
And Richard Jenkins, finally, one of the many reasons I love him to death, is like, you better get down there. Like, yeah, you better an hour ago. Get down
there.
So
we take our spaceship, which, by the way, looks like a throbbing erection.
Oh, it's a cocket. It's a full-on cocket.
This thing is a beautiful dildo that King Kong would use.
Yep.
It's just a huge, huge dildo. Like, and you know what? We'll have some pictures up on the Facebook page. I'm not just being a jerk. The top of this thing has a penis head.
Yep.
It just does. It looks exactly like a huge shaft.
It's got segmented thing. It's yeah.
So we go, we launch, right? Let's just get into it. We're going down through the water.
And the laser beam's cutting through everything.
This laser flashlight that's at the tip of this thing is just cutting through it. By the way, right before we burrow down into, like, the bottom of the ocean, there's a bunch of whales.
Oh, yeah.
And I guess, like, the signature, you know, the electromagnetic signature that this cocket is blowing off sounds like whale songs. And Delroy, like, someone's like, oh, there's the whales are singing at us. And Delroy Lindo's like, no, we're singing to them. And I was like, just get to the core.
It'd be great if he just hits it. Your love. Taking me, huh? Sing it with me, New York.
Whales love Jackie Wilson. Or Howard Huntsberry, depending upon how many cuts you got.
They go really nuts for Barry White.
It'd be great if those whales started trying to fuck this dick.
I thought that's what was going to happen. I honestly did. I thought a whale was going to, like, get up, either, like, fuck it or fight it or like, fight it and then fuck it after it's defeated.
Rub up against it a little bit. I mean, it does do that.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, this is interesting. This didn't happen in Star Trek 4.
Yeah, the whales were definitely flirting with the dick. I don't know if they did anything with it, but.
But so then this fucking huge cocket burrows into a supple pink hole that this laser makes.
Drills the world.
It drills the... We are drilling the world. This movie, the tagline for this movie should have been, go fuck yourself, planet Earth. Because all it is this is the planet getting fucked. Literally fucked by humanity.
No. It's this summer, get drilled.
This summer, Aaron Eckhart and Hillary Swank get drilled the core.
Give the earth a good pegging.
Oh,
This movie's terrible.
So we're going to the bottom of the earth for no good goddamn reason, and it's just...
We're using our Wolfenstein navigation system to dodge rocks or whatever.
And we hit a geode, right? Whoops.
Hank Schrader's, like, wet dream-sized geode this thing.
So we have to get out and push. Essentially, we have to get out and push.
Delroy Lindo kicks a stagmite off the tip of this cock, and then Bruce Greenwood gets murdered.
Yeah, I mean, we all get out like it's like, oh, let's stretch our legs outside in the center of the earth because they have magic space suits made out of the same shit that the spaceship is made out of.
Yeah.
And they're like, you know, they get out and they have to like move stuff around. And I guess for some reason, Aaron Eckhart faints, I guess.
Here's what happens with that. So it's Delroy Lindo is using like this gun that's powered by air or some nonsense, and it breaks, and he's like, oh no, there's no oxygen getting to this thing. Aaron Eckhart pulls the oxygen tube out of his suit and plugs it into the gun, and Delroy Lindo continues to cut. Who told you to stop cutting? He continues to cut, and Aaron Eckhart passes out. Also, by breaking through into this geode, what Stanley Tucci refers to as the Geode Grand Canyon. So they break down into the Geode Grand Canyon, and then a bunch of lava starts dripping into it. And they're like, oh, well, we've ruined this and possibly made things totally worse down here. Better get back in the ship.
And yeah, Delroy Lindo is kicking this geode off the thing, and he finally kicks it enough, and it goes off. And Bruce Green, it's one of those great like movie deaths where it's like, hey, everything's great. It's like when that kid runs through the window and Home at the End of the World. It's like, yeah!
Oh,
and then he just starts bleeding to death.
I'm drinking with the adults! Smash. It's and, that.
Yeah.
Sort of.
He's like, hey, David, look at this. It spins his dad's gun and gets shot in the chest.
It's real. Here's the thing that is kind of what this death is in this movie. The planet assassinates Bruce Greenwood because he's like, all right, kids, time to go. And you just hear like a... And it's like a geode fragment has shot
a
into
pebble.
His head. Yeah, it's just a little piece of it.
Bruce Greenwood gets assassinated with a pebble.
I knew I shouldn't have gone to the center of the earth.
He did play Kennedy
in 13 days.
That's right.
Kevin Costner's just out there trying to protect
him. Oh, with that fucking accent. That movie's a pile of garbage. It's based on a book by Bobby fucking Kennedy, but I guess Bobby Kennedy doesn't look like fat Kevin Costner. So Kevin Costner has to be, I'm your Secret Service best friend from the old neighborhood. Shut the fucking flying fuck up.
Hey, Jack, thanks for giving me this job. It's just like the old days.
What a coincidence that I would be in the Secret Service when you're the president.
Weird. Oh, that movie is... If you want to take a deep nap, put on 13 days.
It's longer than this, which is just amazing.
It's a real feat is what it is. And so Bruce Greenwood just goes bloop, bloop, bloop in the lava. It's really hilarious.
He just like pleasantly falls in the lava. And you know, there's no like, let's try to save him at all, because that's how super dead he is.
Yeah, he's beyond dead.
Delroy Lindo's like everyone else is like, oh, what happened? What happened? And Delroy Lindo's like, you know what? Don't worry about it. We got to just keep going.
Well, I mean, and we're going to, I mean, now we're into it. This entire movie is, okay, we've done this in 3 months, so there's a lot of mistakes on this cock ship.
Yeah, it's Delroy Lindo being very apologetic, like, well, sorry, I only had 3 months, I didn't think of this. Sorry, hey, remember that 3 months? Couldn't think of that.
The reason that it stops this first time is Aaron Eckhart says, I didn't teach the navigation system to calculate empty space.
Oh, right. They don't see the huge drop coming. He's like, if it's black, we can't cut through it. Which, by the way, movie, you have a giant flashlight laser. It can cut through anything.
Yeah.
That doesn't need to be a problem in this movie.
Well, this movie, the thing of this movie is, it's, and this is what the rest of the movie is specifically, is we have a central problem, which is, holy shit, the Earth's core broke down, and how do we fix it? Well, Aaron Eckhart has a reason to fix it. But now at every turn there's going to be a new problem that Aaron Eckhart has to fix, which he does every single time.
And it's a blood sacrifice every time.
This fucking crew's going to get its hands dirty.
It's 80% him doing math in his head and 20% picking which crew member is going to sacrifice themselves.
Well, that's like, if I was ever to be put in this situation where I was going to fucking, you know, the Armageddon meteor or whatever the fuck, my first thought in the head is like, well, I'm dying.
Yeah.
I'm dead. I'm going up there and I'm going to die.
Which is interesting. This movie does not have one of those scenes where they're like, all right, everybody, you realize this is a suicide mission.
Yeah,
we got to save the world. Like, there's none of that. We just get right into it. Other than Checky Carryall being like, you know, I've got two daughters and a wife at home. Like, that's the only personal shit.
Dead meat, duh.
Yeah.
I mean, like, the good thing about us never being having to be in this situation, we have no, like, marketable skills that would ever be anyone.
Guys, there's a huge asteroid that's going to hit Earth, and we need four guys to go up in space and talk for 90 minutes in a comedic fashion and do cartoonish impressions of celebrities to thwart the meteor's path.
Here's the positive thing about knowing about the unpopular Stone Roses record.
Oh my God, it's working!
You did it, Chris. You crossed the streams. So Aaron Eckhart wakes up and they're like, well, we got good news and bad news. Good news is we're moving again. And he's like, oh, that's pretty good. And he's like, yeah, and it's a little hotter in here. He's like, is that the bad news? He's like, oh, no, Bruce Greenwood's dead.
Bruce Greenwood's dead, and you're kind of responsible.
Yeah.
You know, is the underlying thing. It's like, he got out to kind of save you because you fell over.
Yeah.
You know, this is why on Star Trek, the captain isn't supposed to go off the ship with the away team. It's got to be Riker. It's got to be Spock. Whatever.
Yep.
Kirk and Picard are supposed to stay on the ship for a reason. And Bruce Greenwood getting assassinated by a rock shard is that very reason.
And so he's bummed out about it. And then the next problem comes up, which is Checky Karyov's like looking up the nuclear codes in the nuclear room. Whatever.
It's down at the back end of the
bottom
penis
of the
shaft.
Yeah.
Right where the balls might be. And right near the vest.
Oh no, I only had 3 months to help design this spaceship and I forgot to put the balls on.
I better take a left at the Vons, the friends. So he's doing this thing, and then for some reason, like, I guess the pressure starts to crush the room, and it's like, oh shit. And Checky Karyov, like, gets Del Rolando and Aaron Eckhart out of the room, and he's like, here, my friends, take these nuclear codes, I will survive. And, like, of course the door's got, like, a locking mechanism, like an airlock, because, you know, obviously, if there's a pressure leak, there's a big problem for this impossible spaceship in the center of the Earth. Like,
right.
We're hanging on by a thread as it is.
And there's a lot of event horizon magic here going on.
And it's a close, and Checky Karyov is very much like, goodbye, my friend. And, like, this is when Aaron Eckhart starts to lose his ever-loving shit.
Oh, my God. If the MTV Movie Awards gave out a shitty popcorn trophy for best temper tantrum, winner that year is Aaron Eckhart for The Core.
I believe it would be best tizzy.
Because he's just like, no! Oh, no! Oh, come on! Open the door! And he's like yelling to Hillary Swank, and he's like, come on, back! Open the door! Open the goddamn door! Yeah, I'm yelling! Open the door! And she does it. And he yells for 4 minutes. And then Checky Karyov hilariously just kind of gets, like, smooshed to death.
It looks like, I said before we recorded, it looks like Jonathan Pryce's apartment in Brazil towards the end of it.
Yeah, it's just like, there's more things in here. Oh, no, there's more things here.
It's a Python bit. Like,
it is.
Like, I'm picturing John Cleese, like, standing in a room, and he's like, well, that box wasn't there before. And it's like, every time you cut back, John Cleese has another box in his apartment.
And on the little screen, it kind of looks like one of, like, the Mystery Science Theater rooms.
Yeah, it does. It does.
It's really, TV's Frank is getting crushed to death.
Like, Gypsy can't do anything about it.
God, that vacuum cleaner puppet. It's one of the dumbest things humanity's created.
And so he's like, oh, God, no! And he dies, right?
Yep.
And fucking Aaron Eckhart is not having it. It's really Monday morning quarterbacking. He runs into fucking the top of the spaceship, and he's like,
Come on, Beck. What's your problem? Why didn't you open the door? I was yelling for you. Yelling so much.
I was right there. I could have helped him.
And the award for best tizzy goes to this.
Take it and look at it. I was 2 inches from him. I was 2 inches and I told you to put the door up and you didn't. I was screaming for you. Why didn't you do it?
Because I had to make that decision. Fate or God?
No! You, damn it, you leave God out of this.
Oh my God.
It's just so much.
It's such a tizzy.
It goes on and on and on and on.
It really... This movie is 2 hours and 14 minutes, and this is kind of one of the reasons.
Because Hilary Swank says, what did you want me to do, like, 4 times? And his answer is, I was right there!
And it's like, he's saying, like, well, how can you be so, like, flippant about this? It's like, because we're trying to save the world. And if I did what you wanted me to do, we'd all die.
Yep.
So I, you know, like my dead mentor, Bruce Greenwood, told me at the beginning of this adventure, I have to make the tough decisions, right? He's like, you don't become a leader until you know what it's like to lose.
Yeah.
You know, so, and here it is. Here's her making the right decisions and him being a fat, handsome baby.
So at this point, so the clock's running out, and also for no good reason, DJ Qualls, the rat, is in the command center, which makes absolutely no sense. Where,
yeah, this, you know, well, you're working from home with this. You know, the government's going to set you up at like a safe house or something, bunch of supercomputers. You don't need to be at NASA with everybody else.
You know, you're giving this guy clearance codes, really. Yeah, this is happening.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I mean, I guess you need a Billy Bob Thornton because Richard Jenkins obviously does not give a shit.
Well, Richard Jenkins, I don't understand Richard Jenkins' role in all of this. Like,
no.
He's supposed to be a general of some kind, but he knows nothing about the problem. Like, we keep saying NASA, but like, NASA's not involved in this.
It's just the military.
It's a military command center, but Richard Jenkins keeps having to be like, hey, so how's everything going? And Alfred Woodard's like, it's fine. Go sit in the corner. And if I need to, you know, launch a rocket at Syria, I'll do that.
Well, because
I'll ask you about that.
It's weird because they actually do the exact opposite of what they do in Armageddon. In Armageddon, on the rock, there's like 3 different storylines going on. And there's just Billy Bob Thornton back at the base.
Right.
In this, there's 3 people back at the base, and there's just this one little cramped area where all the heroes are. It's kind of a chamber drama, honestly.
It is. And this is when secrets come home to roost in this chamber drama, which is apparently Stanley Tucci was part of something called the Destiny Project, which was like trying to make
weaponize earthquakes.
Yes.
That's kind of what I gleaned from this
which
as well.
Which is what caused to put Aaron Eckhart's genius into words here, put the wrench inside the engine that is the core. And Stanley Tucci's advice is like, oh, you know, now for some reason we should just do the Destiny Project again and we'll redo it and it'll be fine.
It's also a funny thing where they explain like what the Destiny Project is and everybody's like, hey, Richard Jenkins, why on earth would you create this weapon? And his response is like, well, we discovered how to do it, and then we had to build it before someone else built it. I'm like, oh, America. God damn it. We're our own undoing.
We're all just mustachioed Richard Jenkinsons here.
Yeah, and you know, the thing about it is, this movie, like, that all comes to light, right? And there's no consequence to it.
Oh, absolutely. Like, well, no.
Well, you're spoiling the Watchmen ending.
Yeah, Andrew.
Because that it ends on everything coming to life, but we don't know what's going to happen.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Now you just reminded me how bad that movie is.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I was referring to the graphic novel. So, but, you know, because they find out that the core is of a different density because they were just guessing. And
look, Delroy Lindo keeps reminding us there was only 3 months.
So
there's
like,
only so many calculations you can do in 90 days.
So they're like, okay, that's plan B is the Destiny Project. And Aaron Eckhart's like, no, plan C is we keep going and figure it out. Just figure it out on the way. We wing it, baby.
Well, because this whole movie, he's just doing a bunch of silent math in his head. So he's like, listen, just let this noodle keep going, man. Something's going to vomit out of my mouth at some point. Just keep digging.
We've got like two other people who can die before I die, so
yeah, exactly.
Don't worry about this. I got this.
He's like, it's either me or Hilary Swank. It's gonna be last in this movie. Hopefully, both of us. I'm the fucker, you know. But yeah, so we'll. I think I'm fine. And so basically, in tandem of their trying to do the Destiny Project upstairs, and DJ Qualls has all sorts of hacking dramas where he's crying while hacking.
I was just gonna say, crying while hacking is one of my, in 3 years, one of my most favorite notes I've ever written. Crying while hacking.
He's hacking so hard he just bursts into tears.
The whole thing is like, they're like, listen, we're going to do this. He's like, you can try to launch off your thing, but fuck you, says Richard Jenkins. Like, we're doing it. We're launching it. And Tucci, you know, wants to turn around because he's like the coward of the movie. And so DJ Qualls like sends a text message, like an encrypted text message to Aaron Eckhart, and he's like, hey, heard about this Destiny situation. How can I help? And Aaron Eckhart's like, LOL, stall them.
So also, you're not a character in this movie, yeah, but thanks anyway.
Yeah, this is how they try to, you know, speaking of wrenches in the machine, try to throw him in here. It's like he's trying to hack into the government thing, and he keeps getting denied, and he's just denied so many times he starts crying. It's amazing.
It's really good.
It's like he keeps on trying out for the football team. It doesn't work out for him.
But it's like he can't be upset that he knows these people are going to die because he met them, like, what, once for 15 minutes?
And he has no interest in any of this. He's just a guy that wants fucking Hot Pockets, as far as I can tell.
And Xena jerk tapes. That's all he wants.
And to play Pong on his computer.
Yeah, he's playing a little bit of Pong there. That's funny.
So they roll the death dice, and Delroy Lindo's number comes up, right? And it's what, this is my favorite, are you kidding me, science of the movie. And there's a lot of them. And so basically something, we need to start separating the ship, but the only way to do it is to do it manually, obviously.
It's always that, you know what, if there was 4 months, we would have had a computer automation to separate, but yeah, we got to do it manual, man, only 90 days.
And apparently, while having to do this operation, they say it's going to be 9,000 degrees.
9,000 degrees.
Can't exist.
It's hotter than it's as hot as the sun, which is great. But the funny thing is like they're like, well, Delroy and Lindo, what are these suits? How much can these suits withstand? He's like, well, half that. So let's just, here it is. It's 9,000 degrees in this room. It's 4,500 degrees is what this suit can withstand. And he goes in there and starts to do this thing manually, and he's just like, oh, it's really hot, getting hot in here. Like, no. It's still 4,500 degrees hotter than your suit is allowing.
You're walking in there.
You're dead.
Vapor rising.
Yes.
I was like, how did they open the door? Exactly. How did any of this take place?
On the ship. It's inside the ship.
I don't get it. I don't get it.
It's not, if all I can lift, if all I can bench press is 100 pounds, and then you put another 100 pounds on that, I'm dead immediately. Because my body, you know what I mean? It's not like, oh, it's really, really heavy. No. The maximum I can withstand is the one thing, and now you're doubling it.
By the way, both Delroy Lindo's death and especially Checky Cario's death are caused because Hilary Swank crashes into a bunch of diamonds. Like, she's like, oh, hang on, fellas. Apparently, this laser that can cut into the core of the Earth can't cut through diamonds. And I know they're supposed to be, like, the hardest material ever or whatnot, but, like,
shut up.
But just shut up. Yeah. just shut up. How about that?
Shut up for a while.
We're in an unobtainium ship.
Yeah.
Get over it.
You're burrowing to the center of the Earth in a cock made out of something called unobtainium.
And one of the rooms in your dick is 9,000 degrees hot.
And you have nukes on board.
So, oh, of course. We have to have nukes on board. So Delroy Lindo's dead by the power of fucking reason, and they don't. Unfortunately, he just kind of like his. He's like, oh, it's so hot. Oh, my heart came out. No. You're a puddle of Delroy Lindo goo.
That is some Delroy Lindo gumbo. It's like speaking of some spicy bam gumbo.
It's like when they drink the liquor in street trash.
just a puddle.
He had to be. Yeah, he's Frosty at the end of that thing. He's just a hat and a fucking corncob pipe. Like, that is it.
What's amazing, though, is the way the movie decides to do it is he breaks down, like, piecemeal.
Yeah.
So he's walking in this thing.
Walking, but in 9,000 degrees, mopping his brow.
The fucking...
The second the door opens,
all the ice in his lemonade glass melts. And then, like, his little headlights on his helmet burn out. And he's like, oh,
His glasses fog up.
Then his glasses fog up and shatter.
9,000 degrees.
Why not a million?
9,000 degrees. It would be, you know, it's 2003. I would love it if they played Smash Mouth in this song. You might as well be walking on the sun.
No, because that's a scene, like, hey, can I get a little music in here? And Hillary Swank just turns it on.
It ain't no joke. And he's just melting.
I always wanted to die out listening to an ironic song.
Thank you very much.
Kind of wished it was 2 weeks, but...
What I love, too, is when he does the thing, which again just kind of involves him kicking something.
Yeah,
he's like twisting a whatnot.
Pumping the manual such and such.
She's like, all right, Delroy Lindo, turn around. Like, we can get you out of there. And he goes,
turn around that 9,000 degree room if you can.
Dude, if a movie ever needed a John Carroll Lynch-esque melting.
Yes. Oh,
it's this.
Absolutely.
Instead, it's just like a magical whiteout. Like, a second door opens, bringing in more heat.
Yes. And a whiteout just happens. He's vaporized. He's just. So I guess that only happens at what? 10,000 degrees, that's instant vaporization, but 9,000 is just like, whoa, I gotta pat my forehead through this space suit.
I should have wore shorts today.
What was I thinking wearing jeans on this mission?
Black t-shirt? I really.
9,000 degrees.
Oh, man.
So he's dead.
So, yeah, he's dead. And now it's Stanley Tucci's turn to die, because we're getting a little closer to the core.
This episode is just a checklist of hilarious deaths.
It's a really good one. And, you know, for some reason, I don't know how they expected to move the nuclear bombs, but, like, now they have to do it by hand. And it's just, you know, it's Aaron Eckhart and Stanley Tucci. You kind of wanted... Delroy Lindo's still around to help you move around those nuclear bombs.
Yeah, you want a bigger dude with a little more upper body strength. Because that's exactly what happens is one of them, it tips over and pins Aaron Eckhart against a wall. And he's like, come on, Stanley Tucci, just lift it off me. Just how I'm pushing, you have to pull. And he's like... I can't.
It's one of those things where he like puts his hand on. He's like, can't. Too late. Gotta go.
He's like, oh, it's hot and heavy. Yeah, I can't.
Oh, I tried so hard. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I have to do this. I gotta go. Bye. Sorry. I tried. I really did.
And then Hillary Swank, I think, runs afoul of a diamond the size of Cape Cod, which is a lot in this movie, and like jerks right, and the nuclear weapon goes
bounces off the wall.
It does, and rolls over fucking Stanley Tucci's foot. He's like Phil Leotardo. He's like, ow!
Stanley Tucci gets run over by a nuke in a fucking upstate New York gas station parking lot
while his grandkids are looking.
Some fat kid's like, oh, shit. This is my favorite part of that whole scene.
Oh, that whole series.
Yeah, seriously. And he's just like, ow, it's on my foot. And like Aaron Eckhart's like, yeah, I got nothing, man.
And this is like, Stanley Tucci, by the way, has already, before Delroy Lindo goes in the 9,000 degree room, he's like, hey, by the way, sorry I stole that shit from you and made millions off your idea. Bye.
Yeah, so he's redeemed. And he also comes up with the idea of how to fix the nuclear thing, which has got something to do with, like, well, if we do it in just the right order,
it's like a reverberate. Yeah, it's like a ripple effect thing. So they're like, instead of launching off all the payload at the same time, you do one here, let the shockwave go, launch another one, and then the wave will build up. Well,
and it's lucky that this dick is segmented in such a way, because that's just why did we think of that?
Well, because we're in the I don't know if we said it. We're in the core at this point.
Oh, yeah, we're in the core.
We're in the core, and it looks like the alternate universe in Pacific Rim.
Yeah, it's that monster universe.
It's just kind of like a bunch of stuff, like lights going on.
Well, that's I was really hoping for some monsters, like some last minute monsters.
That was the thing. Yeah. I had never seen this movie, and I mean, like I said, I thought it came out in the 90s. Like, I totally missed this movie, and I was like, what are the odds we got some monsters?
Yeah, like, yeah, like a good, like, you know, Skyward Sword flying dragon. Yeah.
And let me tell you something. That would have made it kind of cool.
Yeah. Absolutely. There's a lizard people world. And
yeah,
then,
like it starts off like an Armageddon type movie.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it's a Pacific Rim type movie or like an Event Horizon. Like, there's something down here.
Maybe the Thing's extended family lives down there.
That's where the Thing vacations. When he wants to get away from the really cold weather, he goes to the center of the earth.
Maybe there's a bunch of Daleks down there.
Exterminate Eckhart. No, he's too handsome. Negate extermination.
And so Stanley Tucci's like, well, this is on my foot. I'm dead now. And
well, this is on my foot now.
So I'm just going to smoke this one last cigarette and then you can shove me off.
He smokes a cigarette and then he's like, one of his like annoying things is like he has a little, he's like writing a book or something and he's like recording into a recorder.
He's got a little tape recorder. He's making notes.
Monologuing about stuff and he's doing it. And as he's going into the core of the earth, he realizes how ridiculous it is and starts laughing.
It's probably, I got a total legitimate laugh because he's doing it and he's like, fading into the heated core, I think back to my boyhood days on the vineyard or like whatever horseshit thing it is. And he stops and he just goes, what the fuck am I doing?
Yeah.
It's so funny. It's so, that line so lands.
It's a real Stanley Tucci winner.
And then it's like we rack focus to this nuke countdown and he has like 4 seconds to live. And he just explodes. It's great.
You think that wig is making it? Like, it's just everything else is gone, but Stanley Tucci's wig is just in the core of the earth.
All of these nukes didn't really cut it, but somehow the jump starts happening. We can't explain it, but the world is saved. And then it's like camera effect back down to the core, and you see the core spinning, and there's just this like little silver dot, and you're like, what is it? And it gets closer to the core, and it's just the wig is caught on like this crack, and it's like keeping it all together. I'd love it. Like the sideburns are still visible. It would be awesome.
And I mean, now we fix the core. I mean, I don't know.
Well, I mean, now the whole thing is the end of Pacific Rim. Like, yeah, we just got to get back up, you know.
Well, they have to eject their nuclear. They realize that they don't have enough nuclear, nuclear bombs. Like, well, what else could we do? Well, it's Star Trek. Let's eject the warp core. So that's what they do.
Pretty much.
They have their nuclear reactor that gives them all their power.
Aaron Eckhart hauls the core.
Yeah, he does.
The engine core. Up the stairs while it burns his hands.
And there's a bullshit thing here.
It was only 800. It was only 5,500 degrees in that room, so it wasn't so bad.
It was no, that was a walk in the park.
Yeah, I mean, it was probably like 300 he could withstand, and this was just a little hard.
But he's really like breaking balls, like pulling this thing up the stairs, and you just hear the whole time like the sizzle, and then he does it, and Hilary Swank's like, you know, you did it, good job, everything's fine, it worked, and he's like, take my gloves off. And you have that line, yeah, right? And he says it like weakened and kind of cryptically. I'm expecting she pulls this glove off and it's just his hand is like cut in half.
Yeah.
You know, like both of his hands like just fall on the floor.
It's like cooked roast beef or something. Yeah.
It's just a bunch of au jus sauce just everywhere.
Two hoagies on his wrist.
It's when they like lime you in Fight Club.
But I mean, he's just got like some burns that he put some bandages on. Yeah. And it's fine.
It's like, ooh, that coffee was too hot. I burned myself a little bit.
It was like I burned my thumb on a lighter last week. Like, yes, that's what happened.
It's all raw. And they're like, oh, we're fucked. And then all of a sudden they're like, oh, we could ride the shockwaves back to the top of the earth.
Again, it's more mental math. Yep. Like, if there was ever a need for some beautiful mind-esque, like, numbers graphics,
yep,
you know, where he's just seeing all this shit, like, it's stupid, but at least it's something. Because the two of them sitting there, And like they've you know, accepted their death. And then he's like, wait a second. And I'm like, wait, what?
Like a good, beautiful mind sweep of all the numbers.
Yeah,
remember,
exactly.
He's looking at the big board. Yeah.
I mean, an animated physics equation isn't the most exciting thing, but at least it's something other than just staring at that ruggedly handsome face, which only gets you so far.
And Aaron Eckhart.
Swish.
No, she's a good looking woman.
That's great.
So they pull out of the core.
Well, the funny thing is, because it takes them literally 3 days to get down to the core.
Yeah.
And the screenwriter's like, I don't know. I don't want to do another whole 3 more days. And like, well,
my pizza's getting cold.
Come on.
Hey, come on.
Like, well, if they ride the nuclear blast, they'll get back in like, I don't know, 4 hours. That better?
Yeah, that's all right. Why is that? Why is that? All the writers in this writers' room, played by Fred Stoller.
come on.
Hey, it's fine. Yeah, but we got to make it realistic. So they lose power at the other end. How about that?
Well, that's what's it's ridiculous. Is he's like, we were riding this heat wave.
Riding the heat wave.
It's a heat wave. Riding this heat wave, right? And he's like, well, now we're back on the bottom of the ocean. It's cold as fuck. We're stuck down here. We got no communication. What could possibly save us?
Back pocket.
Hey, what do you got back there? What do you got back there? Fred Stoller screenwriter.
Oh, that thing about the whales.
Remember that one?
Oh, shit, the whales, that's right. Oh, hey, I got to call my ma, tell her I solved the problem with the whales.
All Navy ships look for whales.
So hey, maybe we should use that hacker character that didn't have a lot to do. Maybe he'll fix it all.
This is the biggest pile of horseshit in the whole thing. So they're like, all right, let's go out on this battleship. And look
we
for
we think
them.
They might be somewhere.
Right.
Let's bring DJ Qualls along because he's the hacker.
That's the bullshit part I'm talking about. You're not bringing the hacker with you. This guy does not have the clearance for that.
Well, that guy's in the middle of the fucking the Hercules arc in Xena. You can't ask him to go away from that.
He's mid-jerk in Xena season 3.
And at this point, what's his face? Richard Jenkins, I mean, like, knows that, by the way, after all of the tears, DJ Qualls was able to stop the evil other machine from doing what it was. It was hacked. And Richard Jenkins has this sly look of like, I don't know about you, but I guess the world is saved. But why would you bring him? Like, you're like, oh, that guy's not trustworthy. Yeah. So that's it.
It's like, here's the thing. The world is saved. Like, the job's done. They know it's done.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
They don't know where, you know, Aaron Eckhart and the cockship is, but they know that the job is done.
Yeah.
Richard Jenkins, you as the crooked military general, also have your suspicions that DJ Qualls fucked with your Destiny project. This is where you realize, okay, I don't need him anymore. The core is spinning.
Yeah.
Earth is fine. Shoot him in the head.
Yeah, not even shoot. Just jail. Just put him in military jail.
I'll meet you both halfway. He gets wagged the dog at the end. It's just like a fucking injection heart attack.
Well, because that's where the genius of Michael Bay really would have helped out. Because he's like, that's a plot point. I could play with that.
Yeah,
and it was like, yeah, let's put him in jail. He dies. Something like that. The guy's got to do something.
Best case scenario, he never sees the sun again.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I'm saying? Like, no, instead, I'm going to bring him along on this trip, even though I'm pretty confident he sabotaged the plan that I decreed as a general had to happen.
That cost at least $2 billion.
Easily $2 billion.
And he has all of the country's biggest secrets. Whatever. And so he realizes that the whale song, oh my God, and he screams out, oh my God, it's the whales. And
he's like just yelling and dancing on this fucking aircraft carrier.
He's probably crying a little bit.
Oh, there's definitely some hacker tears.
He's the weepiest hacker I've ever seen.
He's crying about hacking. He's crying about whales.
He's a hacker. He's jumping around a lot. You think those jeans are probably going down a little bit with each jump?
Yeah.
And then eventually it's just boxers.
And so they find them, and that's the end. And they're like, oh, Hilary Swank has this moment of like, it's a shame no one will ever know what Checky Cario, Stanley Tucci, or Delroy Lindo, or Bruce Greenwood did to save the world. And Aaron Eckhart's like, You think?
Cut to DJ Qualls dressed up as the lead singer from New Radicals. Fucking, you get what you give when you work for a secret government mission.
My favorite part about the scene, he's at a place called Cyber Cafe.
Yeah.
He walks in, he puts down a folder with government secret on the cover.
Totally. A bunch of skull and crossbones. Classified folder.
And he hits an icon called unsungheroes.doc and double clicks it. And he uploads it to the world, and like the last 5 minutes of this 3-hour piece of shit is like all of these like news reports are coming in that the world almost ended. Like, A, this would be immediately debunked. It's easy to be like, oh, that's fucking fan fiction. What do you want from me?
That was some slash fiction.
Unobtainium. What are you talking about? That's not a real thing
at all.
That's
clearly bullshit.
Like, what craft could ever withstand the Earth's core?
Some fact checker at CNN's reading it, and he's like, 9,000 degrees. Get the fuck out of here.
I'll get our science guy in here. You don't need the science guy. 9,000 degrees. Did you read it?
The intern figured out this was horse shit.
Hey, mailroom guy. Yeah. What do you think about 9,000 degrees? You think I'm like, nah, probably not.
Crinkles it up and throws it in the garbage.
And here's a little loose end, because this movie is actually almost smart enough where nobody else has family, so it would make sense. Like, when these people die, or no family we know of, when they die, like, nobody's going to miss them. What about Checky Cario's wife and daughter?
Yeah.
Or daughters? Like, aren't they like, hey, what happened to Dad? Like, where did he go?
You know what? I seriously think it's Richard Jenkins putting a fucking two in the head.
He would have to, right? Like,
just make him disappear, man. That's what it is.
I'm going out for some cigarettes. I'll see you later.
Or they're like, he sticks somewhere like manning a Sphere station.
Sphere. Stay tuned.
Stay tuned for a conversation about a totally watchable movie.
I really like that movie.
But also, by the way, you know what this movie needs to end on? And I can't think of the movie right now that does it, but maybe it'll jog your memories. This movie, because of the nature of the hack ending, the hacker ending, it needs to end with a Moby song.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
Right?
Well, the Born Identity.
That's what I'm thinking of, is that Moby song that ends those flicks. Instead, we get Jared Leto's 30 Seconds to Mars.
Oh, I believe Gone in 60 Seconds also had a Moby.
Oh, does it?
I'm almost positive.
Speaking of Stay Tuned, but that band is terrible.
I hate Jared Leto.
Yeah. I don't hate him, but I'll tell you what. You want to pull your hair out, you watch that Chapter 27 where he portrays Mark David Chapman.
Oh, yeah, you can have that.
And Lindsay Lohan's a something-something.
Yeah, that's great.
Oof.
That Mr. Nobody, I keep it.
Mr. No. Oh, yeah. Oh, that's a bad flick.
It's so fucking stupid.
That was a movie where it was like getting tons of praise, and I was like, this seems impossible.
It's
a movie that stars Jared Leto.
And he's fronting it.
Jared Leto presents a Jared Leto film starring Jared Leto, written by Jared Leto. Soundtrack by 30 Seconds to Mars.
And Jared Leto.
Would anybody recommend The Core, man?
Not really. It's a pretty strong no, because it's a bunch of bullshit, and it's a really kind of a painful watch. It's that runtime, man. If we can get to the core within 20 minutes, which is totally doable from a movie standpoint, if we could all just get our shoes on, you know, get ready, come on.
I'll tell you what, if this movie was like a 1960s Hollywood C movie, the plot totally is, first of all, the movie would only be about 70 minutes anyway. So, like, you would, it's feasible you can get to the core in 20 minutes.
Yeah, like, even start on it, because it's such bullshit. I would rather start on it and not know, you know, oh, is it the future? Is it not the future? Yeah. Like,
sure, why not?
It's a big no.
It's a no for me, too. Because it is, like, if, like, think of something like Contagion, where they splinter the plot so much because it is a worldwide epidemic.
Yeah.
And after the first few set pieces, you're literally in like two rooms. You're either in the ship or you're in the military base.
Yeah, you're totally right.
It's boring as shit.
It's just one office or another.
And like, then the core just looks like a bunch of white shit floating around. Like, it just, it's not anything. And yet, two hours and 15 minutes of my life.
It's unbelievable. Like, there were several times where I paused it to go to the bathroom or something, and I was like, How is there still like 38 minutes left in this movie? I would not recommend it either. I would totally not recommend it. There are so much better examples of like sci-fi, like wacky sci-fi that knows that it's wacky and it's not mm-hmm. taking itself seriously. Or honestly, fucking Michael Bay movies. They're totally
it's fine.
It's more watchable.
Well, we watch goddamn Independence Day.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know if there's a disaster movie I like less than this. I honestly don't.
No, it well,
maybe Deep Impact, but it's really
no, it's even worse than Deep Impact, because Deep Impact at least is like trying something that's like let's see the emotional Deep Impact. This is like you get nothing. You get literally nothing.
And because it's this movie's decision to have the characters be like, listen, nobody can know about this.
Yeah.
So there's that's why no we're in chaos. Two rooms. Yeah, because it's only people in two rooms that know what's going on.
Well, because of the making the Steve Sadak money.
Yeah, oh, the thing with the money.
Yeah. The thing with the fingers means the money.
That's The Core from 2003, directed by John A. Meal. If you want more information about this fine program, check out whmpodcast.com. Follow us on Twitter. Like us on Facebook. Twitter handle is at whmpodcast. Write us emails if you would like. weallhatemovies@gmail.com. Our sister show, Blame It on Outer Space, still going strong. They have an episode on the War on Christmas that was just out. So if you don't have any New Year's plans, you're listening to this and maybe some Blame It on Outer Space also. BlameItOnOuterSpace.com at BlameSpacePod on Twitter. Both of these fine programs are available on iTunes and Stitcher. Rate and review there if you could. We would greatly appreciate it. Spend your New Year's Eve telling a friend or a complete stranger you meet at a party about We Hate Movies. Tell them how much you like it. Spread the word about the show. We would greatly appreciate it.
But first, get your calls in.
We'll get the calls in, right. Before you go to the party, get the calls in. Although, I said this last week, I would appreciate a call from a New Year's party where there's a bunch of people yelling, you know, hi, We Hate Movies. That would be fantastic. Yeah,
I would appreciate a good drunk dial. Like,
yes, please drunk dial us on New Year's Eve. I expect a lot of last second drunk dials from people. It would be fantastic. And by the way, like we said, that window does close on midnight Eastern tonight. The stroke of midnight, the birth of 2014, the death of 2013 is the death of this call window. 718-925-3893. Also remember, it's coming up on January. You got till January 31st, all you digital animators out there. The Animation Damnation Animation Contest. Give us your best 1 to 2 minute segment from our He-Man She-Ra Christmas special episode, and you'll get a whole lot of plugs from us. That's it. Happy New Year, everybody. We will see you in 2014, starting the year with the worst of 2013. Until next time, I'm Andrew Jupin.
Steven Sadak.
Chris Gappin.
Take it easy.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.